Listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Today is January the 12th, 1998. And the world is not in good shape, ladies and gentlemen. This nation is not in good shape. You are very quickly losing your heritage, losing your liberties, your freedom. Your children are losing their opportunities that so many Americans died to hand down to their posterity, or so they thought. I want you to make good note of tonight's broadcast. It is a continuation of that which we did on Friday. This one will be the clarifying mixture, I suspect. And for those of you who don't understand any of it, if you're a Christian and you want to know the truth, just go to the New Testament and read only the words in red. Don't bother with any other word in the whole book. Read only the words in red, for they will lead you to the right path and to the gate, which is narrow. You see, everybody spends so much time allowing themselves. And when I say allowing, I mean it wholeheartedly, for it's the truth. Allowing themselves to be grasped in the coils of deception. If you're a Christian, you know that the great deceiver, the great liar, the great manipulator, is called Satan. If you want to know where Satan resides, if you want to know who he is, look around and see who is telling you all the lies. It's as simple as that. Who's lying to you, entrapping you, deceiving you, manipulating you, entrapping you, wrapping the coils of the serpent around you? And of course, if you're not a Christian, you're some other religion. The same thing applies, ladies and gentlemen, even if you don't believe in a Satan. Lies and deception and manipulation are wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And the only people who practice those things are evil people. You see, they have to lie to you, deceive you, and manipulate you, because if they told you the truth, you would throw them into prison and lock them up forever. Now, if you're a Christian and you want to know the truth, go to the red words in the Bible. Don't bother reading any other word in the whole book. They will confuse you. And when you're listening to someone preaching from a pulpit, go look up the red words in the book and see what Jesus Christ himself said. If you're not a Christian, find out who's telling the lies. And do it honestly, leaving your preconceived notions, your prejudices, and your own agenda behind you when you look for the truth. For if you're looking to prove something that you already believe, you will only find evidence to support it. You will not ever discover the truth. the truth is so important, for this is the age of deception. Almost everyone in the world today is leading a life of fantasy, lies, deception, and they are being manipulated by the fathers, the perpetrators, the inventors of those lies. For instance, I really don't have to spend hours on this British Israelite master race, God's chosen people, all this other kind of stuff thing. All I have to do is quote one thing that Jesus Christ himself said. For all of this is being manipulated in Christianity and Zionism. And it's all a lie. Jesus Christ said, "Whosoever shall believeth in me shall have everlasting life." He didn't say anything about whosoever that belongs to the Anglo-Saxon Aryan race that believeth in me shall have everlasting life. He didn't say that. He didn't say, whosoever is descended from the house of David and believeth in me shall have everlasting life. He didn't say, whoever is black and believeth in me shall have everlasting life. He didn't say any of that, did he? And if you don't believe in Christianity in the Bible, then you have to understand that if you submit to the concept of a master race, if you are of that race, then you are just trying to make yourself feel better and elevate yourself above the rest of humanity. And when you do that, there's nothing masterful about you. It actually lowers you in comparison to the rest of the human race. Understand that. Make sure you take notes and open your eyes today, hopefully, like they've never been opened, and maybe spare you a lot of pain, a lot of living in fantasy, a lot of manipulation. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, none of this British Israelism stuff ever surfaced in the entire history of the world until King Henry VIII wanted to divorce his wife and found out that the Pope would not let him. So King Henry VIII divorced all of England and himself from the Catholic Church, from the Pope, founded the Anglican Church, and then it became necessary to justify his actions to the world, to the English people in specific, and to be able to make it stick. Somewhere down the line, the royal house of England invented a family tree connecting them directly by descendants to the royal house of David, and thus to the Old Testament, the lineage of the divine right to rule, or so they claim. Later, they claimed that all of England, not just the royal house, but all of England, this came later, folks, it was not there in the beginning, all of England were the descendants of the 10 lost tribes of Israel, which according to the Bible were never lost at all, and are not lost today. And that London was the New Jerusalem. And then later, they extended that to the entire Anglo-Saxon race, cutting off the German peoples, claiming that the ancient Aryans were the enemies of the state of Israel, or the race of Israel, as they have come to make it. And then later, forgot all about that, and reabsorbed the Aryan, so now it's the Aryan Anglo-Saxon American people. Discounting the original Native Americans, of course. And we'll take off from there. Still, from the strategic studies of the Executive Intelligence Review, dated November the 14th, 1997. Although the preconditions for British Israelism were rampant in England, the first formal statement of the ideology did not occur until the 1790s, when Richard Brothers, a Royal Navy officer who had fought against America in the Revolutionary War, began to write that England was not just theoretically the New Jerusalem, but that the English people themselves were descended from the lost tribes of Israel, and that they must restore the temple in Palestine. The time for such theory was not ripe, and Brothers was suspected of being a radical and was ultimately confined to an insane asylum, which is exactly what they should be doing with Pastor Pete Peters and all of these other people who are propounding this nonsense to the world and sucking a lot of innocent people into the coils of that old serpent. Around 1840, however, a decision was made somewhere at the Colonial Office or the East India Company headquarters to revive Sarpi's old method of religious manipulation, and the next few years would see the rise of two interrelated cults which would become a major weapon in British foreign policy. First, Irish clergyman John Nelson Darby started publishing texts which he claimed decoded the secrets of the Bible and prophetically laid out the fast-approaching apocalypse. Darby's theories, which we today call pre-millennial dispensationalism, had several striking components. Number one, the millennial kingdom of Christ will sweep away all civilization, and the only people saved will be a tiny group of elect who will be raptured physically into the new kingdom. Two, the evil power in the world is Gog, spelled G-O-G, as identified in Ezekiel, who will sweep down on Israel and begin the end days. Darby confidently identified Gog as Russia. And three, the end will come only when the scripture is fulfilled and the Jews return to Israel and build the temple. How did the state of Israel come into existence, ladies and gentlemen? Check your history. Almost simultaneously, one John Wilson picked up the theories of Richard Brothers and published Lectures on Our Israelitish Origin in 1840, claiming, also on the evidence of biblical secret knowledge, that the 10 tribes migrated to Europe after the destruction of the Second Temple, primarily turning into Christian Englishmen and Germans. The racially inferior tribes of Judah, said Wilson, remained in Palestine and became the modern Jews, and they believed that and preached that for a long time. And today, they say, the Jews that call themselves Jews today and speak Hebrew and practice the ancient Hebrew religious ceremonies and holidays are not Jews at all. Are not Jews at all. They're not even from the tribe of Judah now today. See, these people change their story about every 20 years. No, they're really folks from some weird tribe in the mountains of what used to be called the old Soviet Union. Khazars is the name. The British Israelites claim there are no real Jews alive today. I know a lot of real Jews who find that extremely shocking. And they're not Khazars. They are the real descendants of the real Israelites and the real ten tribes. They are of the race known as Shemites or Semites, which include the Arab people also. So we went from their teaching that the racially inferior tribes of Judah remained in Palestine and became the modern Jews. That flies in the face of everything they say. Because if you've studied the history of the Middle East, you know that the state of Israel was not that ruled, ladies and gentlemen, by the house of David. The house of David was of the tribe of Judah. The house of David and the tribe of Judah warred against and conquered the state of Israel. That's the true history of the region. Yet these people claim that they have the divine right to rule, and they are superior race to all of the people because they are descended from the house of David and the original Hebrew race from the state of Israel, the ancient country of Israel, which wasn't a country that encompassed all of the ten tribes of Israel. There were several small countries, the most powerful of which emerged as the tribe and the country of Judah and conquered all the rest under the house of David. Don't believe it? Look it up. These people are so confused, they can't even find their way to a library and a history book. Both of these bizarre theories were sponsored by the British oligarchy because they exactly fit the Crown's policy requirements. Darby's identification of Russia would be crucial to drumming up support for the war against the country which the British would shortly provoke in the Crimea. Wilson's biblically sanctioned friendship with the Germans was also British policy. The fraud of the whole thing is exposed when slightly later, British foreign policy turned against the Germans. Immediately, Wilson's organization was factionalized, and it was discovered by the winning faction that the Germans were actually, get this folks, the racial heirs of the Assyrians, the ancient enemy of Israel, and therefore the enemy of British Israel. The Germans, of course, have always claimed descendancy from what they call the Aryans of India. Actually, it's a term that was invented by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. And both Darbyites and the British Israelites provided invaluable assistance in firmly turning the attention of the British population to Palestine and the need for the rebuilding of the temple. The timing was crucial. In 1840, British Foreign Secretary Lord Palmerston had unofficially committed the British Empire to Zionism. That's no secret. I've been telling you that for many, many years. And the creation of a British-controlled entity in Palestine. And that, folks, is the real secret to the creation of the state of Israel in the Middle East. On the one hand, Britain needed to ensure that the increasing chaos in the Ottoman Empire did not invite other great powers from developing influence there. On the other, it needed to protect the land routes to India and its growing colonial empire. It also, ladies and gentlemen, would give people who believe in the prophecies of the Bible and the Book of Revelations the belief that prophecy was being fulfilled, and would further elevate the British Israelites as the superior or master race in the world. This became official policy in 1845, with a colonial office report proposing, quote, the establishment of a Jewish nation in Palestine as a protected state under the guardianship of Great Britain, end quote. Such a state, the report concluded, quote, would place us in a commanding position in the Levant from whence to check the process of encroachment, to overawe our enemies, and, if necessary, repel their advance, end quote. The Crown's case officer for this project was Anthony Ashley Cooper, the 7th Earl Shaftesbury, a pious oligarch who combined aspects of both the Derbyites and the British Israelites, cleaned them up for general consumption, and became the leading spokesman for a plan to resettle Jews back in Israel. Shaftesbury's high church version of British Israelism, as well as the various low church versions, grew through the 19th century. Queen Victoria's daughter, Princess Alice, became a patroness of the movement. In 1862, the Prince of Wales and future King Edward VII made a tour of the Holy Land, the first English royal to set foot there since 1270. In 1865, Shaftesbury's efforts came to fruition with the founding of the Palestine Exploration Fund, known as PEF, under the official patronage of the Queen. The PEF brought together funding from the Rothschilds and the United Grand Lodge of Freemasons. There's those Freemasons again. Membership ranged from oligarchs to apocalyptic crazies. And again, religion made a brilliant cover for espionage and colonial manipulation. Nominally charged with surveying the Mideast so that the country could be restored by the Jews to its ancient prosperity, the Palestine Expeditionary Force spent its time subverting the Ottoman governor and making the maps that the British Army would use in the area in World War I. One of PEF's leading explorers in Palestine from 1867 to 1870 was General Sir Charles Warren. According to British author Stephen Knight, Warren, who had been commissioner of London's Metropolitan Police and a Freemason, oversaw the cover-up of the Jack the Ripper murders, protecting both the United Grand Lodge of Freemasons and the fact that the Prince of Wales had had an illegitimate heir by a prostitute. The chief of criminal investigations on the case for Scotland Yard was Sir Robert Anderson, who was a follower of John Nelson Darby. Warren is credited by Masonic sources with virtually rediscovering the project of rebuilding Solomon's Temple. He founded the Quatuor Coronati Lodge 2076, which, under the guise of being the, quote, research lodge, end quote, within the United Grand Lodge of England, has been active to this day, collaborating with Zionists in attempts to create holy war in the Middle East by blowing up the Muslim shrine Haram al-Sharif on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem in order to rebuild Solomon's Temple. Ironically, when the Quatuor Coronati Lodge succeeded in taking over Theosophy, it spun off the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, run by the satanic SIS officer Aleister Crowley, who was a major influence upon the Thule Society that gave birth to Adolf Hitler's movement and much of the inner cult belief structure of the Allgemeine SS. If you study the history of Nazi Germany, you'll find that it came right out right out of the occult lodges of the Thule Society and Freemasonry. In 1919, the 40-odd British Israelite organizations were consolidated into the British Israel World Federation, also known as BIWF, which today spans the British Empire and permeates the United States. The first patrons of the BIWF were the Marchioness of Headfort and Admiral Sir Richard Pierce. This consolidation followed two developments that were the work of British leaders who had been influenced by British Israelism. The first was the 1917 conquest of Palestine and entry into Jerusalem by Field Marshal Lord Allenby, which was intended to achieve a Palestinian mandate for the British Empire at the Versailles Peace Conference. The second, which sought to give an imaginative purpose to a British mandate, was the Balfour Declaration backing, quote, the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, end quote. The Balfour Declaration was nowhere more joyously celebrated than in the Derbyite and British Israelite congregations in England and America. But the joy had little to do with the Jewish people. Indeed, these people didn't believe that the Jewish people were really the Jews. So why set up a country for people that they did not believe were the Jews to rebuild the Temple of Solomon in order to bring their prophecy to pass and raise them, elevate them to the position of master race with the royal family of England, identified as the only direct descendants of the truly holy bloodline with the divine right to rule, related to Jesus Christ, who was also of the house of David. You see how these lies and this manipulation works? While saying that the Jewish people are not really the Jewish people, they want to recreate the state of Israel with the Jewish people that they claim are the sub-race. I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, these people are sick. Literally sick, mentally ill. Except for the ones who are really inventing the lies and pulling the strings and doing the real manipulating, they know exactly what they're doing. And there's nothing insane about them at all. They don't believe their own lies. They just believe that it's going to carry them into a world government that they will then rule. And that's what you need to really understand. For that's really the heart and soul of all of this. The common man has never been told the truth throughout the history of the world, except by a very few people. And when those very few people told the common man the truth, they generally did not ever believe them, choosing instead to believe the lies. I find it absolutely amazing, for the truth, elusive though it may be, can be found by anyone who wants to take the time to look for it. The so-called patriot community in the United States of America and some militia organizations are permeated with these people who call themselves Christian Identity or British Israelites. There is nothing patriotic about them. They exist solely to be manipulating and destroying the United States of America and the Christianity which they claim to be so much a part of. And that's the truth of the matter. These are truly subversive organizations and are not in the best interest of anyone who believes truly in liberty and freedom for all people, regardless of race, religion, or point of ancestral origin. The consolidation that took place in 1919, uniting the 40-odd British Israelite organizations, followed two developments that were the work of British leaders who had been influenced by British Israelism. The first was the 1917 conquest of Palestine and entry into Jerusalem by Field Marshal Lord Allenby. The result, ladies and gentlemen, was the ultimate formation of the State of Israel, to be peopled by the very people that the British Israelites claimed were not the Jews. This Balfour Declaration, that was the precedent for all that followed, was celebrated in the Derbyite and British Israelite congregations in England and America. But the joy had little to do with the Jewish people, ladies and gentlemen. Indeed, they didn't even believe they were the Jewish people, but imposters, as they tell you today. Mud people, as they called them. Indeed, many of these celebrants were anti-Semites who would soon join the revived Ku Klux Klan. The issue was the final fulfillment of the biblical prophecy, and then the end of the world, these people say. And I tell you, that's not going to happen either, because that's not what Jesus Christ said. Is it? He didn't say there was going to be an end of the world. Neither does the original Bible. And every Bible that says it's going to be the end of the world is a mistranslation. The original word in the Greek and the Hebrew means age. It will be the end of the age. Both British Israelism and Darby's prophetic apocalypticism were surprisingly welcome in America. Since both contained a Gnostic core belief, they were not altogether foreign to the theological ideas of many transplanted Puritans. Large factions of the American Puritans could easily be classed as Gnostics. Some early Puritan settlers even came up with a version of Israelism and believed that Native Americans were among the lost tribes of Israel. You know that is the Mormon Church, or the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints. And again, folks, I don't care what religion you belong to. That's up to you, as long as you belong to it in the truth. As long as you know the truth and you choose to still believe it anyway, I'll fight and die for your right to worship at that altar. It only becomes bad when you, in believing your religion, try to foist your religion on the rest of us. Make us conform to your worldview. Try to make everyone who believes in liberty and freedom eat and drink and think and live and sleep. Bow down to whoever you bow down to. That's wrong. And I don't care what religion it is that you belong to. I'm talking to everybody listening to this broadcast. Everybody. Live your life. Believe what you wish. Worship at whatever altar you wish. I will support that even unto death. I will not support your attempting to take away my liberties and freedom to invoke whatever your particular religion or belief believes should be my government or my life. That I will oppose also unto death. the idea that there was the remnant of the lost tribes of Israel in America was sufficiently widespread that it had to be attacked by Cotton Mather, the Puritan humanist. Right or wrong, this is the history of it. The continued effect of Puritan forms of Gnosticism and its use by Britain can be seen in the work of Jonathan Edwards, who started the first big wave of revivalism in the first half of the 18th century. After studying Locke's psychological doctrines, Edwards came up with his own theory of religious affections. The realization that rhetorically conjuring up horrific images of hellfire might have a dramatic effect on susceptible minds, his famous sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, with images of the sinner's soul as a tiny spider held by a thread over a pit of everlasting torture, created a preaching format still used today. But all of that emerged from a well-known classic known as Dante's Inferno, the concept of a hell where there is a perpetual fire burning the souls of sinners did not exist until that book was published. Edwards' Great Awakening succeeded in creating mass hysteria in large parts of the Northeast, coming into direct conflict with American leaders like Benjamin Franklin and other followers of Cotton Mather, who wanted to fire up the population to build a nation. Edwards' son-in-law was Aaron Burr, the murderer of Alexander Hamilton, who presided over the American chapter of the British Hellfire Club, the secret society devoted to the philosophy of Bernard de Mandeville, who argued against any interference by the state in private vices, no matter how satanic. And that is the identifying mark of an Illuminist. It was Burr who saw that Edwards was made president of the House of Orange's Princeton University. Now, folks, neither Darbyism nor Israelism were very popular in themselves in America through the 19th century, although the British attempted unsuccessfully to capitalize on biblical prophecies about Russia, known as the Evil Gog, to undermine Abraham Lincoln's Civil War alliance with Russia. Many of you know nothing about that. At the turn of the 20th century, coinciding with the British efforts to bring America into a strategic alliance, both premillennial dispensationalism and British Israelism began to expand. Most of you don't understand that England sided with the South during the Civil War, hoping to split the United States of America in half so that England could eventually reconquer this continent. Britain supplied a constant stream of preachers for United States prophecy conferences, whose message was that the secrets of the scripture were being decoded and were coming to pass, that wars and rumors of wars portended the Jewish return, the tribulation, and the rapture. The Darbyite theories were assembled in a series of pamphlets, several edited in England, called The Fundamentals, A Testimony of Truth. Far from it. These pamphlets, which included the statement that although man was originally made in the image of God, he had lost that honor by Adam's sin, circulated in the millions in the United States. Indeed, the reason why many Protestant evangelicals and apocalyptics are called fundamentalists is that they adhered to the fundamentals described in these pamphlets. Meanwhile, British Israelism grew. The first American organization based on the writings of Edward Hines, the reigning British Israelite, was the 1879 Lost Israel Identification Society of Brooklyn, created by Joseph Wild, the pastor of Brooklyn's Union Congregationalist Church. In 1883, C.A.L. Totten, who was a United States Army officer, wrote, "Palestine regained are the relation of our race to the race of Israel, the means toward the end." That writing was based on the work of Hine, who toured the Northeast for 4 years, starting in 1884. And a clue to its agenda is the end sentence of the subtitle, The Means Toward the End. There were two American delegates to the 1919 founding of the BIWF in London, namely J.H. Allen and Portland, Oregon pastor Reuben Sawyer. The latter was a Derbyite who came to incorporate British Israel into his views. Sawyer was replaced as the United States representative to the BIWF by Howard Rand, a lawyer who ran for Attorney General of Massachusetts on the Prohibition Party ticket. In 1930, Rand founded the BIWF-affiliated Anglo-Saxon Federation of America, which soon had chapters all across the United States. There has been an intermingling of British Israelism with major Protestant evangelical denominations ever since that time. For example, Garner Ted Armstrong, the founder of the Worldwide Church of Christ, preached that the Anglo-Saxon Celtic race was the true Israelites, and that the British sovereign was descended from King David. Upon his death, his church split between adherents of British Israelism and those who believed in, quote, the rapture, end quote. Likewise, Billy Graham, who founded the Evangelistic Association, got his first training from a British Israelite named Mordecai Ham. Graham rose to prominence after his revival meetings in Britain, where he became associated with such British Israelite influence notables as Lord Holme of the Herschel. Graham's writings were published by the leading BIWF geopolitician Kenneth Hugh DeCourcy in his publication Religious Review. Although Graham seeks to keep it hidden, some of his closest advisors practice Kabbalistic biblical prophecy from the signs of the time. Another offshoot of British Israelism that has permeated the United States, posing a significant national security problem, and that is no exaggeration, is the Identity Church. It agrees that the Anglo-Saxon Celtic race is the true Israelites, but differs from the BIWF by proclaiming the Jews to be descended from Eve's mating with the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Identity has significant influence within a number of paramilitary groups and in the militias, some few militias, ladies and gentlemen. Don't denigrate or condemn the militias, for only a very few are affected by this cancer. And you can tell exactly which ones they are. They'll tell you that you can't be a true American or belong to the militia unless you are a Christian, and specifically Christian identity person. So they're not hard to pinpoint. That makes them not militias, but religious armies. The true militia, ladies and gentlemen, is defined in the law of every state and of the United States of America. There are an awful lot of so-called patriots, however, who are Christian identity British Israelites. These people also believe that Hitler was right, and that Hitler's Third Reich was the promise and should have been allowed to come about. Hitler is one of their big heroes, and they include the Aryan race, as does the modern British Israelite movement anyway, and in England, even after having said that they were not part of the original 10 tribes of Israel, but were the Assyrian enemies of the tribes of Israel, and now they are once again of the tribes of Israel. You see, it's all convenient. Too convenient. This Christian identity also has significant influence, ladies and gentlemen, with factions within the United States intelligence community, the Central Intelligence Agency, and military units such as the Special Forces, one famous member of which was Lieutenant Colonel James Beau Greitz, who is one of the biggest Trojan horses that exist in this country today. This influence of British Israel upon paramilitary and patriot organizations in the United States is long-standing. William Pellet, who founded the Silver Shirts in imitation of the Nazi Sturmabteilung, or SA, in the 1930s, was one such case. Others include Reverend Gerald L.K. Smith, who created the American Destiny Foundation, and then formed the paramilitary California Anti-Communist League. Reverend Wesley Smith, who founded two paramilitary groups, the California Rangers and the Christian Defense League. Lieutenant Colonel William Potter Gale, retired, who first worked with Smith's Defense League, then broke off to found the Posse Comitatus, and so forth. And that brings us to Kenneth Hugh DeCourcy. Mr. DeCourcy excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. I need to get a little drink of water here. DeCourcy, a protege of British SIS Chief Sir Stuart Menzies, was born November 6th in 1909. He was the son of the claimant to the title of the 8th Duke de Grantsmesnil, which is a dubious title of Anglo-Norman origin, nonetheless given credence as an honorary by de Brett's peerage. DeCourcy has had numerous high-level associates, within the Club of the Isles, and he is one of the leading apologists for the House of Windsor's involvement in the drive to impose Adolf Hitler upon a prostate Germany for a drive to the east against Russia. Among his Club of the Isles friends who were involved in the project were His Royal Highness George Duke of Kent, who was also a leader of the United Grand Lodge of England, and King Edward VIII, who was forced to abdicate because of his pro-Nazi views, when by 1936 a faction of the Club of the Isles had come to see Hitler as a dangerous Frankenstein monster. Of course, he remained faithful to the Duke of Windsor, even after the Duke was known to have entered into negotiations with Hitler to be restored to the throne of England by the Wehrmacht. DeCourcy was very close to the evangelical Lord Holm of the Herschel, who was with Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain at Munich. However, the egotist Kenneth Hugh DeCourcy made the mistake of placing some of his records on file at the Hoover Institution's archives, including a document he claims he wrote in Wormwood Scrubs Prison while serving a sentence there for financial fraud. This document concerns his own role in the escape of convicted Soviet spy and suspected British triple agent George Blake in October 1966. Some United States intelligence sources believe that Blake did more damage to United States interests than British triple agent H.A.R. Kim Philby, whom you've all heard of. In his latest prophecy appearing in the pages of Corsi's Intelligence Digest and Special Office, he is once again claiming that there will be a renewed Middle East war by 1998, that's this year, that will escalate into World War III. And ladies and gentlemen, if you could see all of the information that I gather here from all of my people worldwide, I would not reject that as an offhand, ridiculous statement. It's very possible, and it could actually occur. According to DeCourcy, Russia is assisting Iran and Syria to prepare for such a war through the transfer of nuclear technology. In order to save Israel, the British will have to rely upon the United States arsenal to obliterate the Russian-Syrian-Iranian alliance. Should President Bill Clinton, who DeCourcy states hates Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, balk at this escalation, then the British will destroy Clinton by playing their trump card, 60 million evangelicals in the United States. The situation is such that Netanyahu may himself launch a preemptive nuclear strike. Otherwise, DeCourcy said that China was doing everything it could to maneuver Russia into an alliance with Iran for the forthcoming Middle East war. The reason is that Russia is extremely weak militarily. It has only its strategic missile capability left after having decimated its other military units, and that's what they want the world to believe. It is not true, ladies and gentlemen. If there is a new Middle East war, then he foresees China might move to take eastern Russia, which he claims has been a long-term goal. It would be impossible, given China's vast population and territorial depth, for it to be conquered by Russia or by anybody else, for that matter. DeCourcy's latest prophecy is a reliable expression of the viewpoint of a powerful faction within the Club of the Isles. as a leader of BIWF in London pointed out, King George VI had had his genealogical chart traced back to King David, and he educated his daughters in British Israelism, including his heir, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. Now, who are you going to believe, folks? For I tell you that everyone who believes in this scam of British Israelism or Christian identity is, in effect, and in reality, calling Jesus Christ a liar. If you don't believe that, listen to their version of the world's history, and then go read the words in red in your Bible. Jesus said, "Suffer the little children to come unto me." He didn't say, "Suffer the little white children to come unto me." He did not say, "Suffer the little Anglo-Saxon Aryan children to come unto me." He did not say, "Suffer the little black children to come unto me," or the little red children, or the little yellow children. He said, "Suffer the little children to come unto me." He said, "Whosoever believeth in me shall have everlasting life." He said a lot of other things, ladies and gentlemen. All that say the same thing. That he was, if you're a Christian, and you must believe this if you're a Christian, he was the salvation of all humanity. He was the end of all pain and suffering. He was the standard around which all people, rich and poor, sick, healthy, lame, black, white, yellow, red, purple, green, I don't care, to end all of the wars and bring about God's kingdom on this earth. Anybody who tells you anything different from that is calling Jesus Christ a liar. If you don't believe me, you read his own words in red in the Holy Bible. If you don't believe in Christianity, or even in any other religion, the answer to the problems of the world is not the Mormon Church. It is not the Southern Baptist Church. It is not the Seventh-day Adventists. It is not the Presbyterians. It is not British Israelism. It is not atheism. It is simply to follow the teachings and the admonishments of the greatest men who have ever lived upon the face of this earth, one of which was Jesus Christ, who told us the truth, and we haven't listened yet. And even though we have his words at our disposal, within arm's reach in almost every home or in every library throughout the world, people still go and listen to these lies and believe them, go back and read that Jesus Christ contradicted every single thing that these people are teaching you, and you still don't understand it. Can't get it through your head. He said, "Wheresoever you shall gather in my name, there shall I be also." He did not say, "Wheresoever you who are Anglo-Saxon Aryan gather in my name, there I will be also. Or there shall I be also." He didn't say that. He didn't put black in there. He didn't put yellow in there. He didn't put red in there. All of these people are using you. They're lying to you. Once again, they're deceiving you and manipulating you. And they're hating each other and accomplishing the exact opposite of what Jesus Christ set out to accomplish. And so if you call yourself a Christian, you must reject these things. But you must not believe me just because I say it. You go to your Bible. And don't you dare read any other word except those printed in red. Or if you're a Christian, those are the only ones that matter. No other word in that entire Bible matters save those words. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, and God bless each and every single one of you. You've been listening to The Hour of the Time with yours truly, William Cooper. Don't forget to tune in again tomorrow at 6 p.m. once again for The Hour of the Time. You're listening to 101.1 FM Eager, classic radio like you always wished it could be.
Oh, someone who wants you, guess who? Just